One of the things I discovered as I started preparing to preach today is that the thing that a preacher who isn't preaching every week misses the most is getting ready. Each of us have a different kind of discipline of how much we read and how much we study and how much we pray and what we do when we finally come to the point of needing to write the sermon. And this week, I remembered how much fun that really is. Not so much here, but how much fun it was getting ready to be here. Will you pray with me? May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. First of all, I have to kind of make a disclaimer. I take all these medicines, and sometimes my mouth doesn't work, so if I have to take a drink, it's just water. It's just water, I promise. The lot of a preacher is pretty tough. She reads and prays and studies and studies and studies and studies, and then she finally has to sit down to write the sermon. Looking at a blank computer screen, not the blank paper anymore, the blank computer screen, and wondering where in the heck the words are going to come from. Finally, the first words go on the page. It's that first sentence that's really tough. And then it's off to the races. We hope. Sometimes they're snail races. But then she stands up and she shares those words. And again, faced with the unknown. Was it good? Did anybody get what I was saying? Did any of it matter to anybody? And she never knows, because the Holy Spirit and the listener really decide whether the words had any meaning. After one of my early sermons, I was feeling pretty good. I mean, what can I tell? But I was feeling pretty good. I thought I had gotten the message across and had some good things to say. And I was standing at the door greeting the congregation as they left. And one of the congregants stopped and told me how much this illustration had meant to him and how it had caused his heart and his mind to go. And I'm standing there glad. First, let me say, glad that he found meaning, and at the same time wondering, I almost cut that story out of the sermon because I didn't think it was worth much. See, we just never know. I didn't have control over where the sermon went, and for this person, what I'd considered trivial at best became the whole sermon. Such is the life of the preacher. Isaiah would kind of identify with that. Today's text is in what scholars call third Isaiah, the third point of the prophesier, and people will argue all the time over whether it was really the first Isaiah or of his disciples or written by committee, which would make us know it was Baptist if it was written by committee. But that's not where we're going today. Those are interesting intellectual discussions, but that's not where we're going today. You would think by the time Isaiah got through 58 chapters, his congregation would finally understand the two things that he was trying to teach them. The first was right worship. How you are to come to God and worship. And the second, equally important, was doing justice. Those are the only two things Isaiah had been trying to get across for years. And for him, doing justice meant much more than going to the jail to be sure they were convicted rightly. Justice included healing the sick, supporting the oppressed, feeding the hungry. You know those messages as well as I do. Many of you have heard them for a very long time. But it seems like this congregation had gotten sidetracked. We might call it a bit of rabbit chasing or bird walking. They'd heard the words about worship. Now they got that message. And they had decided that right worship required beautiful words, grand worship pageants, getting all the little details just right. Well, every person in this room has their own idea of what right worship is. You love different parts of the service than I love. You love different kinds of things in worship than I love, and that's okay. But Isaiah wasn't talking about whether we use the Revised Standard Version or King James or used the organ or nothing. Isaiah was talking about how right worship was actually right living. Isaiah didn't care what went on inside the synagogue, the tabernacle, or whichever kind of building they were in. Isaiah only cared about what happened when they hit the back door. Because he said, and we should listen, that worship, in order for us to worship rightly, we have to do justice. And if we do justice, what we do in worship will be great. It'll be wonderful. Because we will have done what is first calling. There's so much of our world today that's not right worship. In recent days, we've seen children struggling to get out of horrible situations and illegally crossing the border to find hope. No matter your politics, these are kids. My babies. I always hear Kathy Stanley talking about her babies and the love that's in the words, my babies. These are our babies, and we have to do something. We've seen 600 plus people die in plane crashes. We've heard stories of thousands of innocents killed in war. And it seems like nobody's got the moxie to fix things. Some days I despair of what I can do. Hold that thought. We'll get back there. Isaiah brings his congregation a word about standing in the breach. Being a word person, I had to go see what all those meanings could be in a search. I knew and accept that probably in this particular context, Isaiah was talking about the empty spots between this side of the bridge and that side of the bridge, getting them across the river, getting them out of town. But you know, that wasn't all Isaiah was talking about. I really thought about having us do an exercise. You know, teachers can't ever completely get away from the classroom. But decided instead it would be a little illustration. Think about and remember all of those times, which aren't too many, when we have been asked in this room, in this space, to hold hands. to start here and everybody in the church hold hands together. Well, now, obviously, we have some problems. In the first place, it's a long way from me to you. It's even a long way. Look at this. I have to walk all the way across the chancel to hold hands with these worship leaders. And everybody sitting in the pew is going to have to get up and move to bridge that breach between the two sides of the pews. Being able to stand in the breach is going to cause us to get up from our security and move. But the breach isn't just a space across the aisles. A breach can be the breaking of a promise, a wall between places, real or imagined. Anger between people, violation of public peace, violation of fiduciary responsibility. See, I can say big words sometimes. It's not just physical rebuilding. It's also the rebuilding of all the things in God's world. It's even the lack of responsibility evidenced by our caring for the creation God has given us. There's a lot of breaching going on in the world, don't you think? And what does Isaiah say we should do about it? He says, first, we have to loose the bonds of injustice. Now, that doesn't mean get everybody out of jail or kick out all the bad judges or all that kind of stuff. It means speaking up for our friend who has been wrongly accused and standing in the midst of the fight with that friend. It means standing up with the person who has been ridiculed because they look different, sound different, act different, think different. It means standing with that person. Let the oppressed go free. In an increasingly stratified society, we have difficulty in seeing any more than the haves and the have-nots. I used to think I was kind of in the middle till I spent a year without a job and no income. I figured then the breach was a lot bigger than I had any clue about it. And I learned a little bit more about what it means to stand in that breach because some of you did. I survived, and it was a good thing. But not because I did it, but because some of you were there to stand in the breach of my confusion, lack of having anything, going craziness. You were there with me. And we walked one step at a time across that breach. Share your bread with the hungry. There is a video circulating on Facebook that if you haven't seen, you need to go hunt it. I wish I could give you where to find it, but I'm not that good yet. But in the video, remember, I'm an old person. I take this technology a little slower than some others. But in the video, there is obviously a very hungry and very homeless person sitting on the curb. And pretty soon, this well-dressed man walks up to this homeless person and says, "Are you hungry?" Now, I wanted to say, did ducks swim? But he said, "Are you hungry?" And the man sort of stuttered and said, "Well, yeah." And the man said, "Here." And took the pizza he had in his hand and gave it to the homeless man and just walked away. Well, at that point, I'm thinking, hey, that's pretty cool. But then a younger homeless person comes walking to the man, and the man looks up and says, "Well, are you hungry?" And he says, "Well, yeah." And the homeless man takes the pizza box and shares it with the young person. It has been said that those who have the least often share the most. The tagline is that sociology proves that fact. Bring the homeless to your house. Wow. That's a pretty scary thought that makes most of us pretty uncomfortable. Some time ago, there was a single parent with two young children who was part of the group that was staying in the underground. She's a delightful young woman, and many of you kind of latched on and tried to help her figure out what she could do. She was going to extreme lengths to try to get her children to school, to look for work, to take care of them, and find them a stable place to live. And I don't know everything or everybody that was in the mix of all that looking. But at one point, I went to the director of the foundation and said, "Why can't she come live with me?" I was still in that big house that was half empty. Two empty bedrooms, another bathroom. I mean, come on. And the director started with a list about being careful. I thought, come on, lady. At my age, I figured about counting the cost. She said, "You know, you live kind of south. That's not where the children have been going to school. And there's no good transportation down south, and yada, 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 yada." All the reasons I shouldn't invite this young woman and her two children into my house. Well, life went on, and it got dropped, and I have not a clue where this young family is now. Because it got messed up in the bureaucracy of rules. I really don't think that's what Isaiah had in mind. Isaiah wanted us to get out and stand there and do something. Walk in that breach. Figure out what to do. His imperative could go with Nike. Just do it. As I said earlier in the sermon, the breaches in our society are overwhelming. I often look at them and am almost immobilized by the enormity of need that meets us on a daily basis. Throwing money at it seems largely ineffective. And then something happens that just pulls me up short. This week, I, along with many of you, got an email from Alana about bringing things to give to another church leaving on a mission trip to help the children at the border. And carried with it the same disclaimer that I said, well, it didn't matter how you feel about politics. These are babies, and the babies need shoes and clothes. And in my first reaction to her email, I wrote back, "Dada," and said, "I had been hoping someone would do this. And I swear to you, when I hit the send button, I was convicted. If I had been sitting there for days hoping that someone would do it, why in the heck didn't I?" It's not like the need was a secret. And it's not like I don't have an email distribution list that has a lot of Austin people on it. Oops. Maybe I didn't understand Isaiah so well either. If it needs to be done, why not me? And therein lies what I see as the most important of Isaiah's sermon. Now, I used to dream of doing something big, of doing something great, of changing the world for the better. Well, doesn't look like it's going to happen anytime soon. I might have changed one child, but... And so that's when I started thinking again. Or maybe God started thinking. You know, first I got convicted. It's tough on a pastor writing a sermon to get convicted. But then I started thinking. I can't change the world. My voice isn't that big, although it can get pretty loud. My resources are significantly limited. My energy has the usual problems of being my age at this point in life. But maybe the world I'm supposed to change isn't the whole place that's just in such a mess. Maybe I can change a little corner of the space that is around me. And that change may be for just a little while. But you know what? I can do that. I can figure out ways to show someone who is providing a service for me a compliment for doing a good job. I can be kind to someone who brings me really bad news and not shoot the messenger just because the message stinks. What we can do often really comes back down to kindness. And I bet everyone out there would agree that kindness is a good thing. We like kind people. We just forget. We'd rather worry about what's coming next or complain about the lot in which we find ourselves. Our youth are in Colorado right now, and yes, they all got there safe and sound. And though they all had to go spend the night in Bob Balance's house because it was hot in Colorado, they're fine. So we don't have to worry about them for at least 24 hours till they start working again. But they are out changing the corner of the world. There are people in that area whose lives are still a real mess because of the spring floods. The houses need cleaning up. There needs to be roofs on some of them. The children need a place to play. The churches need to be fixed that aren't finished. They are changing the world. At least that piece of it. And I got to tell you, I don't know the youth as well as I used to, but I can tell you that these kids know how to put shingles on a roof, paint on a wall, and windows in open spaces. They don't know how to say, I don't know how to do that. They just do it. And the people they encounter will have a different world when they leave. Their joy, their enthusiasm, their theirness. I don't know how we got so blessed, but they are amazing people, and they change our lives. I read a quote this week that really struck me, but unfortunately, I can only tell you that I didn't write these words. I forgot to write down who did. But a nation must be rebuilt upon a foundation that is consistently moral and deeply spiritual if the calamities of the past are not to be repeated. And now, like you, I know some people who are supposed to be in the place where they can change it. They don't know who I am. And the fact that I'm a state employee, you know, they really don't care what I think. But I have a say in who gets in that place, in the words I send to them, even though they don't have a clue who Sue Enoch in Austin, Texas is. And no, I am not a politician and hate the thought of getting involved. It's not my thing and never has been. But I think Isaiah would tell us it's time. Because if we don't do something, it's not going to be a pretty sight. We are to stand in the breach. The sermon title said, stand where? Right there in that empty place. Right next to that person who is struggling down the street. I saw the sweetest thing. Alana, was I with you? When we saw a woman crossing the street that was, she was not doing it well. She was having a very difficult time crossing from one side of the street to the other. There was another person at the intersection. And this person had, we had seen her. We were at a red light, you know. This person, I had seen her, I don't know, probably say hello. Nothing. It's a real brief conversation. And then when their walk light changed, this woman just walked up to the one who was not handling it well, gently took her arm, and helped her get across the street. For that moment, in that place, that woman's life was changed. And there is a story in today's newspaper about a woman who has spent her whole life being bullied and teased and derided because she doesn't look like the rest of us. And she has decided to take her pain and turn it into teaching others. And we won't ever know how many lives and gaps that will be changed because she dared to stand in the breach and share her story. Our right worship is not about what we do in this place, although we all have strong preferences for what we like and what we don't like and what we want to see every day. It has always been thus in congregations, and it always will be. So we all live in a space of tolerance of what we don't like and joy of what we do and hope it all kind of, you know, just gets out in the end. But that really is not the worship Isaiah told us about. Isaiah told us that the minute our foot is out that door, we need to open our eyes and our hearts to those who need our assistance. And not just those among our friends and neighbors. And I will tell you, as everybody else tells you, we do a darn good job of taking care of each other. I mean, this is our family. I told somebody as I was walking in the door, I'm fine. All my buddies are here. You know, you guys love me even if I don't have anything to say. So we're good today. That's pretty easy, actually. What's not easy is going to that person we've never met, who's struggling in whatever way we see. Opening the door to our homes, ooh, that's probably the most scary thing Isaiah talked about. Sharing lunch with somebody on the street who has none. Taking clothes that we don't really need anymore. Looking at our budgets and saying, okay, I have $200 this week, and I have to spend 60 of it to buy food and pay the gas bill. But I have $140 that I could make a choice. What am I going to do with it? Am I going to help a courageous young woman do missions on the world for a year? Oh man, talk about courage. Am I going to go down and look for the people on the street who might need a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? Sure beats nothing. Am I going to walk by and give somebody at the corner money, even though I may have some big doubts about what they do with it? See, that part of it's not my job. That's God's job. My job is to take what I have in my hand and share it with somebody who obviously needs it. And we'll let God work out the rest. Where do you want to stand? I mean, that was the whole title of the sermon. Where are we supposed to stand? Lordy, folks, we got all kinds of places we need to stand. Nursing homes where there are lonely people who don't have visitors. A street corner full of homeless and broken people. The place we work, where that one person in the corner cube is always alone. That's where we stand. And that is our right worship. So may we all find the place where we stand.